Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Mages, Sages, and Seers, I'm proud to bring you the Satori Dialogues with Frater Serpentis Satori. Greetings, Satori. How are you today?
All right.
I'm glad to hear that, and I'm looking forward to our conversation on Merkavas and the Seven.
Well, first off, happy Year of the Dragon.
Year
of the Dragon
well.
Is always fun. I was just talking to Cersei about that. No, I was just talking to Cersei about that, about like, no, stretch the claws, fellow Targaryen, stretch the claws.
And for those who don't know much about the Chinese or Eastern zodiac, what does that mean?
Dragon tends to be your year of conquest. Dragon tends to be the year where everything that didn't click into place for the past 3 or 4 years suddenly seems to be fine. As if by magic.
And as you're a magician, you would know a lot about that.
Part of why that was an involved conversation with Cersei about, like, no, it's okay, sis. It's Year of the Dragon. Just do it. Just do it. Tell me when it's over. It's fine. It's fine. Don't go over budget. Don't go. Hecate hates when we go over budget. But to our topic.
Uh-huh.
I sent you the thing about the seven in the Bible and the seven in pre-Hellenistic religions about how the way seven is used in Babylon and Sumeria is meant to be, it is used the way 10,000 is used in Chinese to mean and forever, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
Like I praise the Pharaoh 7 times 7 means I praise the Pharaoh pretty much all day long. So the fact that they were aware of seven celestial bodies and seven became the big number, the important number in the Bible. And for everybody except the Celts and the Egyptians, but that's a separate, those are two separate topics.
Okay.
That seven and the Bible become interconnected no matter how long it actually takes for the Bible to become one book, because there's some issues about that too. But
well, you have
some
the seven
point,
heavens. I know that, and that ties into the subject of our subject for today.
Well, but keep in mind, Merkava and the Gnostic Aeons are entirely separate architectures. They only start mixing together after Alexander, and that is the beginning of Hermeticism.
Because
there are some guys, there are guys who are playing with, there are our iterant Greek wizards who are like, oh, how do I, who lives in the Palace of Mars in the Merkava? Who actually lives here? Versus like, Archon Mechaclolically. Is he a good guy or a bad guy?
Well, I love that about Gnosticism. It's like a palette or like a wheel of some sort where you can explore that question from every single angle. it's basically
I understand that people do not understand Hermetic as arcana. Don't understand that this is the compost pile Hermeticism grows from. The eggshells of Gnosticism and the coffee grounds of Merkava starts mutating into Hermeticism because you have your iterant Greek wizards screwing around with these names. You have a name, I can summon you. Come to me. I summon thee, Melakala, blah, blah, blah. Obey me, Archon of the 75th hierarchy of the 14th moon. Of the 14th moon? Oh, I guess that's correct. Sure.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
No, but when people talk about ceremonial magic, they're forgetting how tripped out Hermeticism's origin story really is. That Hermeticism starts out with guys who have like both lists of names and are like, okay, so I guess I have a year of summoning to do. Get to meet all these nice people.
But I hear what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying. But again, you do have this information, and it is the tendency of humans to equate information with other information. So eventually the seven takes on a lot of meanings that it might not have had originally.
Yeah, but as I showed you with the thing from YouTube, seven originally did mean like 10,000 means in Chinese. It originally meant great, great, great. Because you don't have the concept of infinity yet, so you just say seven times seven times seven, or seventh son of the seventh son.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way in Chinese, you say 10,000.
Yeah, the 10,000 things.
Praise Buddha, 10,000 of 10,000. Well, because that's how you say that in that language, and that's one of the problems with being too hung up on linguistics and tribe. But this is the weird fusion that creates Hermeticism, is when you're starting to mix and match and play with the seven palaces of the Merkava, but you know some of the Gnostic names too. Who are those guys? Uh-huh. What do they do? Well, but the Archons are quite different from the Archangels. And in the Merkava period, those palaces aren't protected by the Archangels. All those spirits have wacky names too. All those guys have names that are all gibberishy sounding to modern people too.
Yeah, very true.
But if you use any of the names from Gnosticism or Merkava in like a modern ritual, people think you've done a lot too much alcohol or a lot too much acid. Like, where did you get that name? Like, it's here. It's right here.
But some people do use those names.
People still use them.
Yeah.
It's not that they're irrelevant. It's just that they're archaic. That's not the same thing.
Now, as you know, I'm forming a Merkava group. And it's going to be very...
Explain your understanding of Merkava.
The Merkava is a vehicle for traveling to other worlds. And these worlds, I personally believe, are astral in the broadest sense of that definition. They happen on the imaginal plane or the plane of dreams or the plane of creativity.
Or the aethers or, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, so they're astral entities, and that the Merkaba is a way of traveling from place to place. Do you need a Merkaba to travel from place to place? No, you don't. You can actually go there by thought alone. The Unarians make that point very clear in their literature and demonstrate it. So you can just think yourself there, and you're there. But it often helps when you're visualizing in order to bolster your belief that you have some sort of system. So it could be a Merkaba, It could be a silver cord that attaches you to your body as you're slowly making your way to wherever it is that you're
it
making.
It could be that scary elevator in the Matrix.
Right. It could be a Stargate.
The scary elevator that leads to the architect.
Yeah, it could be any type of vehicle, and different cultures have different vehicles. From other shamanic type of cultures, we know that a spirit boat can be employed as a convenient thing when you're traveling not alone. So if you're traveling with other people, it often makes sense that you all visualize you're on a boat.
That's classic Egyptian. Classic Sioux. Yeah,
right.
The Lakota and the Egyptians both seem to have the same beliefs about those things.
And so that's how I view the Merkaba. So I'm going to use a more Hellenic variation of the Merkaba because there are hints of it in the literature. Like you have in the Homeric hymns, the chariot of Ares. You have the whole chariot of the gods concept. You have the krater that Helios gave to Hercules to go transport some of the cows that he would win from Geryon. You know, you have that, the vehicle, you know, the astral vehicle. So I'm going to be using a more Greek version of it and then universalizing it after that. And then we'll be using that as a vehicle to travel from place to place in the our visit to the
palaces.
Planets, or to the planes, or to the dimensions, or to the whatever you want to call them.
The word in Hebrew means palace.
Yes.
The word in Hebrew means palace or citadel.
Yes, the Hekalot, in the Hekalot literature.
Yeah.
I'm going to be using this for the seven. I haven't decided yet, but right now it's either the seven classical planets, because that's a universal key in any magic book.
Because that is period. Because
right.
When what happens to Kabbalah when they add the top of the tree is completely different and happens sometime in the Dark Ages.
Yeah, my contention is that although the cultural techniques will give you the result and they influence the flavor of your result, once you find what works for you, that's what's going to be what works for you. And I might have them visit several.
That's the way it always is. That's how we say. That's Ars Magica. That's why there's a role playing game called Ars Magica. Magic is an art form. It's the art of magic. Witches do crafts and wizards do art.
So that's pretty much what I'll be teaching, and this will be part of number three, level number three in terms of the levels that we've discussed in the past. But it'll also open the door to level four, and it will also...
Well, classically, especially in Rosicrucianism, you have to live in those seven cities or seven palaces for a year each, because those are the wizard levels. I have to live in Moon City for a year. I have to live in Sun City for a year, and understand what exactly the crime problem is in Sun City.
And once you understand that these are astral places and astral entities and astral so forth, it becomes a lot easier to live in those places.
No, but like you told your student, it is both within and without.
Right.
When I live in Moon City, I am not just a tourist. I am living in Moon City, and Moon City is within me, and I take it with me in my body when I'm back in our world.
Right.
And that's the original Genesis. There's probably an original Egyptian Genesis to the level system that is disconnected from this, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah, it's. I compared it in a recent conversation on the air with bodybuilding. And Donald Tyson, I wonder what happened to him. He used to do the same thing. We've had like some interesting conversations on it. You do the exercises that you need to do to get the result that you're hoping to get. And then after you try what is written down as it's written down.
Well, then just like bodybuilding, you become tolerant to the ritual. The ritual, there's a certain point where your body can know where you cannot eat that many eggs every day.
Correct.
There's a certain point where your body is like, nope, you have done that thing in the solar level. We're done. You peaked. You achieved the ritual. Congratulations. Move on up to the move on up. And that's what I think the palaces were. Maybe they were created by Jacob. That makes sense. I can see how that could be true. Considering that would explain the stairway to heaven in the Jacob story.
Right. And
whatever Jacob did, it leads. Jacob gives us the original Merkava with all of those weird names.
Well, the ancients, again, they were pretty like open with equating Metatron with Hermes Trismegistus, and Hermes Trismegistus was associated with Thoth and Mercury and Hermes, and you had all these.
But that's in Roman times. That's in Roman times when the Romans are much more fluid about religion because they don't have a clerical class.
Uh huh.
Because the rich kids get to take turns being high priests of different deities. The Romans aren't hard and fast about religion because Romans lack dogma. Romans have orthopraxis without orthodoxy. We have to run around in furs on Lupercalia, but that's the holiday. That's what we do. That's how we celebrate Lupercalia. It's a religious holiday. Just deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's our Roman religion. You non-Romans, just look at us funny. But that's what happens when you have orthopraxis without orthodoxus. When you have them as completely separate the way the Romans do, and they must have been completely separate before the Hanukkah thing with the lamp, because the Jews seemed okay with that for a while. But when your practice and your beliefs get to be separate the way the Romans do it, the holiday is the holiday. It's just Mardi Gras. Just go with Mardi Gras. Just go with Juneteenth. Just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a holiday. Just go with it. And even if you're a Jew and you don't believe in Juneteenth, Juneteenth is Freedom Day. That's fine. Lupercalia is Rome's birthday. Just go with it. Just do what you're going to do. Because there's no orthodoxy associated with Roman practice, Romans are like, nah, just show up and drink. That's fine. That's completely okay in this country. And that's how they handled it, which is part of why it's so interesting of how maybe even Hindu and Buddhist traditions infiltrated Roman magic during the empire.
Uh-huh.
But at some point, the guys who are playing with the archons and the palaces realize that, like, each of the planets is a level.
Right.
When I am in the Mars level, I am in the Mars level, and I'm angry a lot. I'm angry a lot because I have too much Mars energy. When I'm in the lunar level, I see things that aren't physical.
Right. You're more tuned to your dreams.
But other people who have been to the lunar level, like, oh, no, that's fine. Make friends with the little green people. The little green people are your friends. Don't be dissing the elves. The elves are your friends. And that's where the level system had to have come from, because at a certain point, when we broke from whatever the Egyptian system was, however that worked prior to stapling Gnosticism to Merkaba, because that is the beginning of Hermetic Arcana.
Well, my Merkaba and Palaces, planes, dimensions, planets, levels of exploration are actually going to be the beginning of the establishment of the Gnosis component of what I'm doing.
Well, because you have to know they're there before you can move in. There is a Saturn level before you can get a U-Haul and move there.
Right.
You have to know that there are people who actually have gotten to the Saturn level. And not everybody kills themselves. Not everybody dies. Some people just recycle.
And as I get older, Saturn or Kronos, that level relates a lot to how I'm experiencing life and what I'm doing. And in addition to the challenges that come from that part of life, there's also a lot of gifts, like the gift of scheduling, for lack of a better term, the mastery of time. That becomes something that comes much more naturally to you when you realize that the days before you are a lot less than the days behind you.
Yeah. Because the other night I ended up doing a whole lot of tarot readings back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends said something, and I'm like, no. I'm 50. I maybe have 25 more years left, maybe. I'm going to go with what my friend said about 25. I'm going to let her be right because she's usually right. I can count on one hand the number of times she's been wrong. So she gets to be right.
Okay.
But she was saying something about my tarot readings. I'm like, understand, I have to make a choice about working at the White House or reading tarot on Jackson Square. And I decided if I read tarot on Jackson Square, I'm doing good. I don't know if I'm doing good at the White House. I don't know if it's going to matter. At least for all of you as individuals, like Captain America says, I believe in individuals. It's that whole speech. But that's also the part of the palaces, is that as you go up the levels and there's no need to leave the world will leave you.
Mm-hmm.
You become invested with those energies, be it the Palace of Luna or the Palace of Mars or the Palace of Saturn.
Or the pyramid.
When you are in
whatever structure.
Well, sticking with our topic about the seven. Yes, those are true too, but those are different. Those are different ways of seeking the singularity that are not necessarily compliant with each other. Which probably does lead to all of the arguments that lead to Hermeticism after Alexander dies. All of the smart guys arguing at the library with each other and then having to go across the street and drink, and be like, but in Greek, but in Hebrew, but in Sanskrit.
But if you look at it as an astral, again, as an astral operation that you're doing, it doesn't really matter. And in truth, especially if you've explored the mysteries of many different cultures, the source that you're tapping into can present itself in any one of a number of ways. And if you explore different systems, eventually you find that you're playing hide and seek with the same powers.
That's the advantage of the source has.
I'm sorry?
Because it's behind everything. In Hinduism, they say natai natai. It means the same thing about the Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao.
Mm-hmm.
But that's Sanskrit for it. That any god we can imagine is not the infinite one. Because we can imagine
right.
it. And because I work with Indians, everyone said, I'd be like, no, but I agree with you about that. I just do it in a different way because I'm a hermetic. Because I'm hermetic, my brain processed that in a different way. It doesn't mean I disagree with you. It means I use a different symbol to represent that.
Correct, yeah. And I believe that somebody should use the symbols with the most resonance, and also that someone should experiment with different symbolic systems to see what the difference is between the systems. But eventually you get tired of doing that and you just stick with the one that resonates the most. And usually it's the one you started out with, which is...
But see, that's what people who believe in ceremonial magic don't understand. That is Hermeticism's origin story. Hermeticism's origin story is we have all these weird lists of names, and so we're like summoning them all to get their business cards.
And
because
all their names
are these weird. If you go back far enough in both Gnosticism and Merkava, all of their names are gobbledygook. All their names are these like weird syllables that don't translate.
Mm-hmm.
So some guy who's like me summons his way through all of the archons, and then summons his way through all of the guardians of the palaces, just like do meet and greets. Like, hello, I am Frata Satori, you are Makara Makakaka, highest guardian of the Temple of Saturn. So what do you do exactly? What are your goods and services, sir?
You're channeling one of
not
my
to be rude,
no
not to be
wither.
Rude, ma-ka-ka-ka-ka, but if I summon you and I kill you a bull and I pour you four bottles of wine, what exactly am I buying? Just ask. Because that's how it happened. Our like wandering Greek wizards find these lists of names and start doing that stuff, and eventually it becomes hermetic magic and hermetic arcana, because eventually you teach your students, no, you summon makakakaka when you want to put the smack on somebody. He is the guardian of the house of Saturn. He puts the smack down.
And they're often described in these terms as you're mocking them. A lot of the
I'm not mocking that. I'm a summoner. As a summoner, I am not thinking you're the guardian of Saturn. I'm saying, like, you're the Grim Reaper. Get him. Get your bottle of wine in your ribs. Get him. But when people think about Hermeticism as ceremonial magic, they're not thinking that this is where it comes from. This is exactly what the Wiccans are not understanding about where we came from.
There were guys
at the Library of Alexandria who were like, check out this sigil for the guy of Saturn who smacks down people.
When I was growing up in Greece, still, there were a lot of these itinerant wizards. Some of them were like local scholars, like they taught in local schools. Some of them were into, you know, like archaeology or something, but they also studied magic. And there was somebody wrote a book, I don't know if it's still available, the Magos of Strobolos, which is a pretty interesting look into Greek wizards of the 20th century.
But Hermeticism starts with those guys because those guys are the same things as doctors are today. We don't
right.
use what works. We use what works. So if Makakakaki, the guardian of the House of Saturn, can put the smackdown on somebody, we're all going to know that. We're going to be like, oh, no. Yes, it costs you a whole bowl. Yes, it costs you an entire bottle of wine, but he can take down a kingdom. He's bad. It's not disrespectful. It's the difference between the mystical perception and the sorcerer perception. The sorcerer says he is the guardian of the House of Saturn. I respect him because I must go through his door to enter the Palace of Saturn. The sorcerer says, what exactly is your job? Let's interview each other. What exactly is your job? I'll explain my job. Let's talk for a while. I know you're a guardian, but when was the last time you played Dungeons and Dragons? Let's play some Shadow Dark and have a couple glasses of wine, and you can tell me what you do, and I'll tell you what I do. Because most people don't do that with spirits anyway.
Right.
And sorcerers are more than willing to do that because sorcerers are like, no, guardian of the Black Forest of Death. Have you played Shadow Dark? Have a seat. That's a reverend. I'm a sorcerer. I'm a reverend. Part of being a sorcerer is, Aleister Crowley says something about my God has different names in different countries.
Something like that.
If you're a sorcerer, my God has different names in different countries, and we just kind of roll with that. And so when we meet spirits we've never met before, we're like, so, dude, what do you do? Like, meeting someone at a bar. You're like, okay, man, guardian of the forest of the skulls. Well, what exactly is your job? Can you explain that to me in an hour?
And that is the attitude and the approach of several people I know.
Well, but that's the difference between a sorcerer versus a priest. The priest is like, oh, guardian of the forest of death, please let me pass. Whereas the sorcerer is like, have you ever had this mead that's made with jalapenos? It's kind of good. You want some? Check it out. And while you're doing that, it takes 10 minutes to roll a Shadow Dark here. Let's just do that.
That's an interesting guy.
Obviously, you are connected to death. Since obviously you are connected to death, let's just do this.
That's an interesting system, by the way. Thank you for recommending it. I've been exploring it slowly as I do my 10,000 things that rise and fall without cease.
I would love to have her on the show. When you are more familiar with that and want to send her an email, I would love to have her on my show.
Or invite her and you interview her, and I'll just engineer.
Yeah, but the literacy thing is your thing. You're just putting me in charge as an administrator.
Understood.
Because of chain of command and the literacy thing is your thing, it would be easier to do it that way.
Okay, we'll return
again,
to the topic and revisit this another time.
We'll talk about that off stage.
With the archons, archon means leader, or it means
right.
Lord. in Greek.
Lord.
Agios is the one who goes first, the leader, the Lord. Lord, we know what Lord means, and Lord, we know from our own vocabulary, could mean God or the supreme God, or could mean somebody who's in charge of a kingdom, or somebody who's in charge of a estate, or you know, whatever. But a Lord could be anybody from any rank or any type of being. The same way an angel just means messenger. So if you
right,
deliver
and at this period of Hermeticism, we do not have what we will later call the big seven or the seven angels. The seven angels are not directly connected to the palaces. That hasn't happened yet. We do not assume when you are in the palace of the moon, you are under the jurisdiction of Gabriel. That hasn't happened yet. That comes 1,000 years later or so.
But so do we. So we can benefit from
it's important in this period of ambiguous names and ambiguous powers, when other people say ceremonial magic, to understand that the evocators, the summoners, have all these weird lists of names. And because they're iterant wizards, they're like, what exactly is your job? Do you have an hour for an interview? Is this not a good time? of that grows Hermetic Arcana. Everyone who tries to say anything else doesn't know their history and isn't making the obvious connections that had to have happened after Alexander died. Because we have a while between Alexander's death and the Roman Empire. And Hermeticism seems to become gumbo around that time. Although it's not our modern gumbo. It would seem strange to you with Roman spices and everything. Romans use a very different version of pepper than we use today.
A lot of folks, when they're talking about this topic, seem to leave out the Phoenicians. The Phoenicians who contributed greatly to the legends of Atlantis and so forth through their empire on the sea. They spread this information initially, and during the Hellenistic era of Alexander, people who could travel more and started discovering that, and that's how you got the whole esoteric-exoteric distinction with lore and all the astrological...
I always thought that came about in that period because of the difference between clerical truth and occultism.
Uh-huh.
That the exoteric is
the clerical.
This is the Colossus of Sol in front of the Colosseum. He represents the sun god. The emperor is the sun god, thus he is in front of the Colosseum, because the sun god, when you die in the Colosseum, your soul goes to the sun god. Because that's exoteric. The esoteric is the black sun, the hidden sun, which is something that is not normally discussed by clerics.
Yeah, the esoteric is the occultism aspect of it, plus the mathematical aspects and the astrological or astronomical aspects of it. It was all the information that made sense out of the clerical stuff that was going on. The clerical stuff was very public, very open, except for some of the mysteries that started getting into the esoteric.
Esoteric is like, why is this guy holding these things in the mosaic?
Right.
Why are we celebrating the death of the sun with roses? Huh? What's up with that? Why does Mithras have a raven? What's up with that?
Yeah, those were the symbols that add many shades of meaning to the story and point in the direction of much insight that you wouldn't get by just knowing the story that's shared with the public.
Right, and it's always been the difference between a cleric and a sorcerer. Because the sorcerer's like, no, but in Irish mythology, the raven is the Morrigan. Hindu mythology, the raven is always evil. Ravens are evil in India. Indians don't like ravens. In Ireland, we're like, people die. People die. Oi. Sorry, brother. You're dead. May you drink well in the river of whiskey, my brother.
And a lot of these places, palaces and otherwise, magic forests and happy islands and all sorts of things, are states of mind that people often find themselves in through astral operations or is after-death states which, you know, are still viable and worth visiting. Because a lot of these... Even though a lot of the esoteric is beyond time as we understand it, there are lots of abandoned places on the astral, just like there are on the internet. You know, you can find tons of ruins of places on the internet that haven't been touched in a very long time. And in the same
way, you can find lots of empty storefronts in any major city right now.
Correct. And it's the same thing with the astral locations. They might not be the same places as described, just like an ancient city is described is certainly not the same as that ancient city if it survived into modern times.
Right, like Rome.
Right, like Rome.
That just had its birthday because the 15th is Lupercalia. The 15th was Rome's birthday.
Happy birthday, Rome. Remember when I shared how when I did ancestor work, I discovered to my chagrin and dismay that, I did not fall far from my family tree, even though I thought I did earlier than that. I had a DNA test done recently, and that also was a mind blower and a game changer. It seems that my DNA encompasses the entire Hellenic world. So there are West Asian and North African, yes, strands to who I am, in addition to the Greek and Italian and Asia Minor associations that I already knew about. I have Egyptian, Phoenician, all sorts of stuff in me. You said it right. These are all the places where Hercules was honored. So that changes my perspective now a great deal.
Hercules has, 1,000 sons or something?
Yes.
You have more sons than Morpheus. No offense, Morpheus.
Morpheus has been very active in my life lately as well. The in-between places that you start seeing the connections when you're in the house of Saturn, as you phrased it.
Well, when Circe is physical in my life, Morpheus is around more just to keep an eye on both of us. She actually joked he was our chaperone, and I'm like, you can't win against him. He's Lord Chamber. He'll change the rules and then cast a spell, because he could do that, because he's Lord Chamber. Don't ask.
And yes, you're using the Gaiman mythology, you are also one of the few people that I've met. Although there have been a couple of books about it, they're not very well or widely read. But a lot is communicated through popular culture. You know, a lot that is mythic and it's recognizable, and that is something that. A lot of people, including a lot of folks who are into metaphysics and the occult, the importance of popular culture and gleaning what's going on in the collective psyche or collective mind of mankind.
Because you always have to do that if you're knee deep in it.
Right.
If you're knee deep in it, you need to know what's in the water. I need to know if I'm in Marco Island, Florida, or in the catacombs of Rome before I go into that water.
And like anything else in any other area of exploration, especially if it's internal, a lot of things don't make sense till later or afterwards.
It always makes more sense a month later, no
yeah.
matter what it is. It always makes more sense a month later. Because then you're able to tell a story to yourself about what happened.
Yep. And oh,
and
that's why
Morpheus as the god of stories. That's back to Morpheus as the god of stories.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm thinking of in my visit to the seven places, be they palaces or something else.
Hekalot means palace.
Yes. But I'm not doing this specifically using the Kabbalistic interpretations. I'm using the Kabbalistic.
Yeah, but those are still the people that live there.
Right, there are people that live there, but they have different neighborhoods they will be visiting. So I'll be visiting the Greek neighborhoods in the Roman neighborhoods mostly. So for instance, there's the visit of to the realm of Helios by his son, Phaethon, that is a symbolic story about visiting the house of the sun and, not being too cocky with using the solar energies, because you can cause a lot of destruction to yourself and others. So I'll be visiting from there. But also I'm thinking of visiting the different realms that are kind of blurred together in the exoteric Greek mythology.
Well, keep in mind that every one of those seven realms has a sub-octave that represents all the other realms. There's a Saturn part of soul. Like there's a solar part of Luna, which is an eclipse. And we've known this forever, too. This
right.
isn't new information. This isn't new.
For the introductory part of what I'm doing, I'm going to not go into all those subtleties. Those will be for later explorations.
No, that normally happens when you live in that city, when you spend your year living in the city of Seoul. We're living
after,
in the city of Saturn.
And after 7 years of this curriculum, we'll get there. But for now, the quick guided tour of this system, it's not going to go that deep into anything, although people are, of course, free to research and find out where they're living on their own terms.
But I mean that's where the seven chakras come from. This is hardwiring all of us as humans.
Yes, I have a just like I have a group on the external planets. I have a group on the inner planets. In fact, I call it the inner planets, where we go into the chakras and their planetary equivalents and how, like everything else in occultism, there are differences of opinion. And this is my opinion. And
infinite are the arguments of wizards.
Oh, and congratulations.
Infinite are the arguments of wizards.
Congratulations. This is our second season that started today with the Satori Dialogues. And this is episode one of season two. And season one was a stage of this journey, and now season two is a new stage of this journey. And what I'm doing now with the podcast is I'm starting to recategorize them. So right now we have the categories Theosophia, which means divine insights, and theurgia, which means divine practices. And both of those now come under the umbrella of the Athenaeum. And I think I have to be Arcana.
Kelsey gets to be right. I think I get to be Arcana.
Okay.
I think I am a different category because I am a sorcerer, and I respect those things in a very different way than the others do. Because Arcana is about both wisdom and power and understanding, like, the spirit world is more complicated than either of those groups think it is. There's a reason Sting called his album 10 Summoner's Tales. It's that problem.
So
I am non-binary in those two categories.
Okay.
I am Arcana because I am, what we are doing is the history of Hermetic Arcana until we're done with that, until I decide to draw the line and be like, we're not going to talk about these people. That's too close to the present. And then we shift to the labors of Hercules, but I am neither nor in that because I am not a priest. I'm an evocator. I am not bound by those rules because I did not agree to that. I'm a doctor and a Rosicrucian. I'm not either of those things. But here we come to me being the other within most of your practitioners. I am the most other.
So we will have to come up with a third category.
So this is Satori Dialogues. This is what it is. I am self-defined as I am Satori.
Uh-huh.
And I am a sorcerer. And I am the god I am, and I tread the path I tread, but trying to put me in boxes is dangerous and difficult.
There's
and when
no
other people have
put anybody in boxes, it's just I'm putting up a road
sign. I understand you're trying to play categories, but these are categories
right.
I don't fit in.
Okay.
I am not comfortable with being in either category because neither of them is true for me. And to say I want to do that is disingenuous to my path.
Understood. So we'll keep it the way it is, the Satori Dialogues in Mages, Sages, and Seers, which is a broad umbrella.
As much as I understand those people want to be on those boats, I'm wandering around in the Forest of Skulls, wondering where the magic items are. Because Forest of Skulls got to have some pretty cool magic items.
So we'll have to find more sorcerers to extend the conversation.
That's very hard because most of them don't want to be on the record. Most of us are quite comfortable living in the shadows.
Understood.
Which is you normally get this answer about you talk to Llewellyn authors so you can't talk to me. That's normally how they tell you that. Because I am semi-public, I'm in a different situation than everyone else. Because between working at Reverend Zombies and publishing Thelemic Alchemy, I am not invisible. So my situation is very different from someone who's a priest. I have very different notes.
Well, I really don't think that we're establishing any priestly path at this particular point in time.
It's just that theomancers, someone who lights a candle for God for everything, rather than summons the guardian of Saturn and asks, like, so, dude, what's your job? Those are completely different ways of handling the same situation.
I don't see that, but that's okay. We have a difference of opinion there. I don't light candles or do any of those things either. I see a lot of the entities as ancestral spirits. So as far as I'm concerned, they're part of my family. And although I'll do good things for my family because they're my family, it isn't really tied to what I want to, you know, somebody in my family to do, because that is on the level of they either want to do it or they don't want to do it. It's just basically like if you invite your parents or your aunt and uncle or your cousin over for a meal or, you know, a glass of wine and conversation or something. So I don't see that really as priestly. And as you know from our long history of conversations, people who are priestly have a difficult time with me and my outlook and my beliefs and my practices.
Well, it's because you're a shaman, and we sorcerers have different problems with you because we're more technical.
Uh-huh.
Sorcery is very technical.
Right. But I'm not a sorcerer.
Because there's the whole thing. Well, no, but a priest says the will of God is thus. The sorcerer says, but why are there only two candles? What are you doing? There are only two candles.
Yeah, I guess shaman would be the best way to describe what I'm like and what I do and what kind of fits in.
Well, you always described it as Olympic shamanism.
Yeah.
You, the label you post on yourself is Olympic shaman.
Correct. That's only because I could find no other way to describe it, but that doesn't really, like, I don't do drumming. I don't do any of the regular shaman things. I don't paint my face. I don't.
But that's a different weird topic. If we ever get into phonic magic and we get into how the Irish girls are weirded out by my fairy magic. What the hell is that? Oh, that's a centaur. Centaurs are real?
Yep.
Duh. Obviously.
And on that note, the robot voice came and beat me to it. We're reaching the end of today's on-air conversation. One quick question before I ask you how people can contact you. Are you interested in being on any panels? Are theurgy panels been going on for over half a decade?
I am not interested in clerics. I don't want to deal with theurgists. I'm a sorcerer.
Okay. We're also doing a Major Sages and Seers panel, which represents a lot of different perspectives. So it'll be everybody who's interested who's a Mage, Sage, or Seer on that.
It depends on how timing goes with everything I have to deal with right now in all of the worlds.
Okay, very good. And is there any way people can contact you to enter your world, Satori?
Not just yet, because I have some things I need to figure out because of something I was told a long time ago that I finally understood.
Understood. Thank you very much for this conversation. I always enjoy speaking with you. It always broadens my perspective. Thank you, my friend, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, I'll catch you in a couple minutes.
Okay, and thanks to all who tuned in. Joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Till next time.